gentlemen, the store is closing in 5 minutes. It's closing forever because it's a record store and they're all closing.
Hello, world. This is Chris Abalo's podcast experiment, and I am Chris Abalo. Welcome to the show. Thank you for subscribing to the show on the podcast app of your choice. Thank you for giving the show 5 stars and writing a little review. We appreciate that. Thank you for following the show at Kate Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Also very much appreciated. Thank you for spreading the word and telling your friends and helping to grow the show. It's nice to see steady and consistent growth in the audience, in the listeners, in the downloads. It's really, really, it's awesome. And, you know, it's summer and everybody's heading back out, so people are busy. So, hey, hopefully you're still listening to the show when you're maybe commuting to work or when you're heading out on vacation or something. You know, if you're driving around or maybe you're just doing chores. Maybe you're washing dishes and you listen to the show and that's your time to kind of catch up on it. No matter how you're listening to the show, it's appreciated. And I'm happy to see that despite it being summer and people are finally getting back out and having somewhat of a regular summer this year, it's still nice to see that people are checking out the show and more people are getting turned onto it. So thank you very much for that. So this is not a studio show, as you probably noticed. I'm doing this episode from the home studio. And actually, that will be the case with next week's episode as well. Just a heads up. I mean, I usually don't get into what's on the upcoming show or like next week, tune in for such and such. But these next two episodes, well, obviously, one including this one, and then next week are going to be from home and then returning to a shared universe in 2 weeks, because this is an episode that is very personal to me, if I'm being honest. I don't think I'm overselling it. So I want to sit and kind of do a solo episode, which I don't do them that often, but this seems like the right time and I have a lot to talk about when it comes to this particular subject. And then next week is something special, particularly if you've been listening to the show for the last couple of months. I think you're going to have fun with this. So next week is going to be something different as well. Hey, experiments in the title. We're going to mix things up some of the time. We just had Ryan guest host a few weeks back. There are going to be some more guest hosts in the future and some more Chris-free episodes, so to speak. So everyone can look forward to that, including me. Now, since I'm doing this week's episode from home and doing it solo, there's no Zoom video and there's no video from the studio. Next week's show, I'll just go ahead and tell you what's happening. So it's going to be an archive release because the show has accumulated a lot of bonus material, so to speak. And if you're a supporter on Patreon, go to patreon.com/CapePod if you are not currently a supporter. And at the $5 tier, you can start getting bonus audio and all that, including pre-show. There's generally a lot of pre-show. You'll get the audio of that on a weekly basis, as long as there is pre-show banter, which more often than not, there is. And it's almost like that adds up to almost 2 extra shows a month, pretty much. So next week will be volume 1 of the archive releases, which will pop up every now and again. Maybe I'll do like 1 or 2 a year. It's not going to be a regular thing. I mean, I guess if it's semi-annual, that's, I guess that qualifies as a regular thing. But they're not going to be too frequent. But once in a while, it's nice to have a show in the can and to also put this stuff out there in part to plug the Patreon. Because if you like what you hear and you want more of the pre-show nonsense and stuff that doesn't get released with the general podcast release, that's free every Monday. I'll admit it's a little bit of an ad for that, but it will also have some stuff that hasn't been released, which I won't tell you what it is just yet, but next week is going to have something that's exclusive, never been heard elsewhere, never been released, and it's recent. So it'll be, if you've only been listening to the show for a couple of weeks or a couple of months, then you should be into it, and it'll be a lot of fun. So obviously that doesn't have a video component to it, and there won't be video clips for this episode or next week's episode. So what am I doing instead? Well, what I've been sitting on for a while have been videos of the 4 rounds of Quarantine This or That I played with some of the interview guests. And since quarantine is essentially over and it better stay over, at least at this stage, we hope to hell it doesn't happen again. I do want to keep doing it with interview guests, but I just renamed it Cape This or That when I did the episode a couple weeks ago with Mike Zapsik. I just said, I'll do Cape This or That because I generally have some questions that come about through the course of my research and everything, the prep I do for interviews. I kind of come up with some questions that'll be fun. And it's the 2021 equivalent of the quarantine questionnaire, which is what I was doing with people last year If you haven't heard that, if you're a newer listener, then there is a compilation in the podcast feed, the Quarantine Questionnaire Collection, which was a whole different thing. It's not like this or that. It was more just kind of open-ended questions. But I had fun with that, so I decided to do something different this year with the one-on-one shows, the interview shows. So that's how the This or That game came about. Anyway, the next 2 weeks on the YouTube channel and on Instagram, because the video clips go up on Instagram as well. I don't care where you watch them. Just watch them and share them and give them a like and a thumbs up and all that other good stuff. This week will be the first two rounds of Quarantine This or That from Cape 156 with Ming Chen and 158 with Sean Johnson. And then next week will be the third and fourth rounds of Quarantine Questionnaire with Pete Morano from Cape 160 and Militia Vox from Cape 163. It seemed like a good opportunity to finally put them out because I thought about putting them out in a themed week. And it's like, maybe I'll just put them out, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday in 1 week. But since this was very much its own thing, I figured, all right, let's put these out. I've had the videos cut together. Let me just put them out now that there aren't studio shows and videos to go up this week and next week. So there you go. You're going to get four rounds of Quarantine This or That. They're a lot of fun. They're actually, I think they're just as funny watching the back, if not funnier, because you get to watch people kind of struggle with figuring out the answers. And sometimes the guest will go on a tangent or their explanations will be entertaining. And the visual element, I think, is a lot of fun for something like this. And you can tell I'm having a lot of fun doing it because I did. I like giving people challenging questions for this or that because it's fun to make people squirm. But in all seriousness, it was a lot of fun. And I thought, well, there's only four of these. Cape This or That will be a thing. But since these were done earlier in the year and to correspond with the archive element of next week's show, I thought, why not put out some videos that have not been seen before? So again, if you're not subscribed to the YouTube channel, you can get that link in the link tree, which is on the socials, and also follow the show at Cape Pod on Instagram because the video clips go up on there as well. So before we get into the main subject, one last thing, because I can't not talk about it, and that would be the death of Dusty Hill, bass player for ZZ Top. And this one really hurt. Now, I had a conversation with Andrew about it right after the about an hour after the news broke. It's funny. I actually went to the movies for the first time since the pandemic started and since movie theaters reopened and everything. The last movie I saw in the theater was The Rise of Skywalker. So it's Star Wars in December 2019, the last Star Wars movie. So I was waiting and saying, maybe I'll go see this, maybe I'll go see that. And then finally Black Widow came out, and even it took me a couple of weeks to go see it. But I went and saw the movie, and that was kind of a big deal. And I thought, well, it's nice to go back to the movie. So I left the theater feeling good. But I posted about it on Instagram. I just posted something in my story. And the first photo that came up in my feed was a photo of Dusty Hill posted on the official ZZ Top Instagram. And I thought, oh, it must be Dusty Hill's birthday. No, in fact, the exact opposite. I'm not making a joke. It was his death day. He passed away in his sleep the night before after apparently being back and forth health-wise. They haven't really gone into specifics as far as why. But anyway, Andrew called me because he read it as well. And this was, you know, again, about an hour after the band released the statement. It was just kind of a bummer. He did put it in perspective because it was very fresh, just absorbing it. And in my head, I'm like, oh my God, ZZ Top is done. This is a shame. We're going to lose this band. At least we're going to lose them in this incarnation because it's always been the same three guys. And that's such a rare thing for a band to not change any members. I mean, there's Aerosmith, which more or less has been the same five guys, even though Joe Perry was out for a little while. And, you know, it hasn't necessarily been consistent. The same guys have been in the band for decades now who started the band. And a lot of people want to think of Rush, but don't forget, Neil Peart didn't drum on the first Rush album. And in the early days, that was John Rutsey. So it was those three guys for almost 40 years, but not for the entire life of the band. But ZZ Top, it was those three guys. I'm sure that other people can give other examples of different bands, but a band that has passed 50 years, that is something unique. And that was the last big show I went and saw, actually, was ZZ Top's 50th anniversary tour with Cheap Trick opening up, which it wasn't really an opening slot. It wasn't really a co-headlining tour because obviously the headliner was ZZ Top, but Cheap Trick still played for over an hour, which was awesome. But to see two of my favorite bands in the same night, in the beautiful theater in Jones Beach, which is in New York, right on the water. It was an amazing night, and both bands killed it, as always. Granted, I'd only seen ZZ Top twice. I saw them in 2009 at the now-defunct House of Blues in Atlantic City, which Andrew was supposed to go with me to, but that was, I don't remember if we got into that in the only podcast that matters or not. There was something, I'm not going to mention it now because I don't remember if we got into it. There was something personal that came up. So I ended up going with my girlfriend at the time, even though it was supposed to be kind of a guy's night out with just Andrew and I. And of course, the guys were great. And seeing such a small venue, all the more reason I was like, dude, we got to jump on this. We got to go see. Not only have we not seen ZZ Top, but they're playing a House of Blues, which is insane. So we got to go. So he missed that. And then after seeing them in September of 2019, I actually said to myself, you know, I have to twist Andrew's arm to go to concerts. But next time ZZ Top comes around, he's going. Because he can't not see them. Because he does love ZZ Top. He just doesn't go to too many concerts. But I said, look, next time they come around, and also these dudes are in their 70s. We've lost a lot of rockers of a certain generation, you know, of their generation and younger in recent years. So you kind of want to see people while you can. And I want to keep seeing the bands I want to see anyway. You know, Iron Maiden just announced a new album. They're going to be touring next year. I'm in. I will see Maiden every time they come around, unless I physically can't be there. Anyway, that sentiment has followed me around for the last couple of years. So I said, he's definitely going. And now we won't get the chance. And I told him that, man, I said to myself almost 2 years ago now, when I last saw the band, I was like, when they come around again, let's do it. Look, you've probably heard the news. And if you haven't, their longtime guitar tech, Elwood, filled in for Dusty Hill on a couple of shows he had to miss because of health issues. And apparently Dusty gave his blessing for Elwood to take over the bass duties in ZZ Top. So it looks like that's how it's going to be now. So ZZ Top is going to continue at least for a little while. But not seeing those guys, those three guys on stage together again, and just seeing Billy and Dusty on stage just with the synchronized moves and everything, the stage moves and the fuzzy guitars and everything, there's still going to be something missing. Will I still see ZZ Top when they come around? I don't see why not. I love Billy Gibbons as a guitar player and as a singer, and I love the songs, so I can't say I wouldn't go see them. It's not like, well, if it's not the original guys, then forget it. And obviously the circumstances are, you know, it's not, there was some lawsuit or some acrimonious split or something. Unfortunately, he passed away. But Andrew said, you know, he was 72. He lived a life. And what helped put that in perspective is the former Slipknot drummer, Joey Jordison, passed away the day before, and he was only 46. So that's a dude who was cut down way too young. And that actually did stir Andrew up a little bit because he was way into Slipknot in high school and everything. I couldn't tell you the last time he really listened to Slipknot. He's probably listened to a lot of them this week just for nostalgia or in tribute. But this still hurt. The idea that one of the three guys from that classic band isn't around anymore. And, you know, I'm glad the band's going to carry on, because my first thought was like, well, that's the end of ZZ Top. This sucks. The world is losing ZZ Top now. Not the case, but listen to some ZZ Top. A lot of people probably have, but on the streaming service of your choice, wherever you're listening to this podcast, if it's on Spotify or something like that, then go pull up some ZZ Top and check it out if you haven't already, because there's a lot of good stuff there. There really is. So there we go. RIP Dusty Hill. And not to make this a downer episode of the show where it's, oh no, he's going to be talking about bad news and things and people we've lost. The main reason I'm doing this solo episode is because I would like to pay tribute to the New Jersey institution that was Vintage Vinyl Records, which was located in Fords. It was on Route 1 in Fords in central Jersey. Friday, July 30th, 2021 at 6 p.m., Vintage Vinyl closed its doors forever after 42 years in business. And the reason they closed, it really was the best of circumstances for something like this, especially for a store that's been an institution for so long and a legendary store. And that's not me overusing that word in any sense. It is completely warranted here. Rob and Donna, the owners of Vintage Vinyl, decided to retire. Thankfully, it wasn't because of the pandemic and they couldn't pay their rent, or nobody's buying physical media anymore, nobody's buying records or CDs or whatever. It wasn't because of those circumstances. They chose to close the store. And as sad and frustrated as I am by that, that's all anybody can hope for, is that they're able to retire and, you know, a business that they started on their own, leave it on their terms. And they don't owe us as the public anything, as upset as a lot of us are about losing the store and not being able to shop there anymore, or go there for the new release, or go there for meet and greets, or whatever it may be. It really is the best any of us can hope for, is that we can retire on our terms. And yeah, the pandemic played a role in that. They're also in their 60s. So it was time for them. But frankly, it sucks to lose it. It really, really does. The email went out on June 21st, and I woke up to it Does Vintage Vinyl close its doors by July 31st? And I was just like, no. Basically, the headline of the email, that top part, which said Rob and Donna are retiring, which obviously they want to let everybody know right up front the reasons for it. Understandably so. A lot of places, a lot of record stores even, have not survived because of the pandemic, because, you know, their businesses were hurt. And obviously the ways we consume music have changed a hell of a lot, and people aren't buying it the way they used to. So record store is a tricky business. People were kind of surprised. Why didn't somebody swoop in and buy up Vintage Vinyl? I don't know if that was something that was on the table, and maybe that's been covered. There have been a lot of articles that have been written about it. I'm not going to go into the history of the place. You can find it. NJ.com did an excellent article, and there's a lot of history in there. I haven't seen anything to say, and if it was in this article, I'm probably going to sound stupid if you read it and say, it was right there in the article. They said they didn't want to sell to somebody else. I don't know if that was on the table where somebody could have bought it and taken over the store, and I don't know if anybody would have been interested in doing it, because despite the fact that location has a lot of history to it and people would continue shopping there and they did enough business, again, they weren't in any kind of trouble, but, you know, this timing happened because their lease was up and whatnot, so they decided to close the store this summer. But I don't know if they would have wanted to, because Rob opened this place on his own and it's his legacy, and maybe he didn't want to hand it off to somebody else or have some other business or conglomerate or whatever come in and start running what was his store, something that he built and he nurtured and helped to become the institution that it became. So I get that. But there's a lot of history between me and that store, just personally. And there are tons of people who have these stories, literally thousands of people who have a lot of stories. And in fact, I had so many friends on the day this was announced, on June 21st, of course, articles being spread like wildfire throughout social media. And I'm having friends tag me in the comments of these articles on Facebook asking if I was all right, which was completely justified. And I answered everybody. I was like, no, I'm not. No, I'm fucking not. You know, I was very upset, obviously, because it was fresh and it just in my head. I mean, look, it's still not real, even though the store has closed and I went there a few days before they closed for the last time. It's only going to feel real next time I want to go, and I can't. That's when it's going to feel real. Right now, it doesn't feel as real as it will. So I wanted to share some stories from my history with Vintage Vinyl and how this all came to be, because as of this month, July of 2021, it's been 21 years that I've been shopping at that store. And that all started off because of eBay. First eBay purchase I ever made back in July of 2000 was for the Running Free 12-inch single, the Iron Maiden 12-inch single, the live version from Live After Death. Because once upon a time, you couldn't always get all the B-sides and different tracks and things like that. Not everything was available for streaming, and not everything was even on CD, even though I later found them on CD when I found out about the first 10 years collection and stuff like that. You know, it was very specific to Iron Maiden, of course. But there wasn't the bottomless well of information that you can now find about any release on the internet circa 2000. So I thought, well, I got to get this record. I didn't even have a functioning record player at the time, but I said, I want the tracks. That's always been me. I want the music. I want to hear the music. So I bid on this record and I won it. And since it was Vintage Vinyl and it was only an hour away from where I lived, you know, Fords was an hour away from Lakewood, I sent them an email through eBay and said, hey, so I'm only an hour away. Can I drive there? I didn't have a PayPal account at the time either, because I just signed up for eBay and started bidding on stuff, and that was the first thing I won. So I said, can I come pick it up and pay in store? Finally, an excuse to go to Vintage Vinyl. And I got an email back from Rob saying, yeah, absolutely, we'll have it. You know, just give me your, I think I'd give him my name, because obviously it's an auction number, which I wrote down and brought with me anyway. But I said, you know, be there at the end of the week or a couple of days, whatever it was. So I got together with my friend James, and we took the hour drive up the parkway to Vintage Vinyl. And I even remember some things about the trip. My memory is not great. There's a lot of things I don't remember. I can't tell you what I had for dinner 3 nights ago, but I can tell you that on this day in July, and I don't have reference points and like records and dates and from stuff like that offhand. I even tried looking at eBay, but eBay doesn't give you that detail. All it says is over a year ago when you look back at your feedback. And I just thought, oh man, if it had actually the date that was left, that then I would know at least the week, an approximate date, a couple days earlier would have been when I won the auction. But you can't get all that information from over 20 years ago. Go figure. But James and I were hanging out and he was going to take the trip with me. So we took my car, because I had a car at the beginning of senior year and I just graduated a couple of weeks before from high school. And we went to, this is going to be a very local reference, but if you grew up in Lakewood or in the Lakewood area, you will know, we went to Sinjin, which is a gas station, And I think we may have just gotten a soda or something. I probably got gas as well. That was probably the main reason for stopping there. And James got a tin of Skoal or something, some chewing tobacco, which was weird because James didn't chew tobacco. And I think it was his first time even chewing tobacco ever. I don't know why he felt compelled to buy chewing tobacco on this day and have it in the car where you can't just, I mean, I guess you can spit it out on the parkway. It's kind of a dick move, but if you don't want it anymore, what are you going to do with it? You're going to spit it back in the can and then put the can in your pocket? I have no idea. So I don't know why he ended up getting chewing tobacco. Anyway, I do remember we were listening to London Calling by The Clash on the way there. We had the album on because he liked The Clash as well. And he shockingly didn't want to hear a bunch of, 80s hard rock and metal, a.k.a. hair metal. Go figure. He didn't want to hear any of that. So we both liked The Clash. So we were listening to that album in the car. And I do remember I was kind of singing along and shimmying at the end of Spanish Bombs. During the "Oh, my corazón," and I was kind of shimmying my shoulders and leaning into him and mimicking that sound. And he was trying so hard not to laugh and spit out this tobacco. He had this huge lump of chewing tobacco in his cheek, and he was really trying to just keep his mouth closed so he didn't just spit it all over my dashboard, which I appreciated. But I'm still okay with tempting fate, and I'm going to make him laugh, and he better not spit that shit out in my car. Oh my God, I do not need my car smelling like tobacco. No, thank you. And actually, on the way there the first time, because I read the directions wrong. On the website, it said, Parkway North, exit here, Parkway South, exit here. I had misread the directions and was looking for exit 130 on the Garden State Parkway. Well, that's Parkway Southbound. And somehow I'd gotten that confused. I was 18 and dumb. Not a lot has changed. I'm just not 18 anymore. But I'd misunderstood that and thought, well, we're coming from the south and taking the parkway up, not we're taking the parkway north. So I looked at the south directions. Anyway, there is no exit 130 when you're northbound on the parkway. So we pass 131A and 131B. I'm like, oh God, where do we go now? Ended up turning around at 135. I think I may have pulled in. There's a gas station right before exit 135. And I think I asked like how to get to 130. How do I get to Route 1 or Woodbridge or whatever it is I asked them. And I was able to turn around exit 135, get on the parkway south. And oh, there's exit 130. Oh, Route 1 south. There it is. And I walked in the first time, and I was blown away. I mean, now granted, in 2000, now this is when Napster was happening. All that stuff was going on. This is in the very early days of digital music and the beginnings of the music industry being gutted in a lot of ways. I mean, looking back, this was the beginning of the end of huge pillars of the music industry. So this was, CDs and it wasn't even vinyl. Like the vinyl resurgence hadn't happened yet. CDs were still the way you bought music at the time. So it's going to a store that was this full that I'd heard tale of, no less, where it's like a vintage vinyl is everything. They've been around forever. I used to shop there all the time. And I had a friend who used to shop there regularly because he was a big like record and CD collector. Like as long as he loved the band, he would buy everything. And I mean everything from that band. Just put my collection to shame. He probably had like 8,000 CDs at the time. I eventually crossed 3,000 and that's when I stopped counting, but he had a ridiculous collection because he would just buy CDs and records, all the albums, all the singles, all the imported albums if they had extra tracks or B-sides or, if the singles had extra tracks or, whatever it is, not album tracks, he would just buy it all. So I knew about vintage vinyl from talking to him about it, and for whatever reason, I never made the trip, but winning this eBay auction, that's what sealed it for me. And I went up that first time and I was just blown away. I don't remember if I bought anything else on that first trip. And being 18, I probably didn't have the money for it either. Because I was also dumb enough to get a car that I was making payments on. So yeah, I had to pay for that car on the 11th of every month. So I probably just didn't have money to spend. I probably, whatever my max bid was for this Iron Maiden record, I'm sure it was whatever I could afford that week. So I don't remember if I got anything there the first time, but that was the first trip. It was July of 2000. And man, I was in for life. At that point, I said, I'm going to keep coming here. And it became my favorite record store. I would go there constantly, all the time. Now, fast forward a couple of months, as you may have heard from bits and pieces of the autobiography, either on this show or over the years, on the only podcast that matters. In September of 2000, I went to boot camp for the United States Marine Corps. 6 weeks in, my right knee gave out. I was in the recruit separation platoon for 2 weeks and then was sent home and arrived home just in time for Thanksgiving. And my family, my parents and my sister, were at my grandmother's, and my bus ticket was for Paramus. My grandmother lived in Teaneck, so I was able to get a cab from the bus station to my grandmother's house, and we were going to be there for Thanksgiving weekend. when I was discharged from the Marine Corps, you still get paid during boot camp. They do deduct for literally your space in the barracks. They kind of deduct some form of rent. I forget how they itemize it. And the various things that you know, your hygiene supplies, your soap and razors and you know, all that other stuff, that does get deducted from your pay when you're in boot camp. So I left with a check for, I don't remember exactly what it was. It was about $1,000. It may have been $1,100. So I had some money. And we were about 45 minutes probably from Vintage Vinyl, but my sister was going to Rutgers at the time. She was in her senior year, her final year. So she had her own car, and I don't remember where we were heading specifically, but I said, I want to go to Vintage Vinyl. I want to buy CDs. So after I cashed my check from the government, the first thing I wanted to do was spend it on CDs. And I definitely spent over $100. I don't know exactly how much, but I will say, I remember I definitely bought Ronnie James Dio's 2000 album, Magica, which nobody liked at the time. Now that he's been dead for 10 years, people probably think it's a classic. But I remember I did buy that. I bought Renegade, which was the most recent album by Hammerfall. I got We Are Motorhead, which was their latest album. And there was actually a deluxe version that came in this little kind of like clamshell box, which had just the regular CD inside of it and the regular jewel case. And it had a sticker. And I forget what else, but just the idea like, wow, there's a limited edition something. I have to get that. That's kind of where that started for me in 2000, saying, oh, there's a unique version of something. Well, I don't want to get the one that's just available everywhere. I don't think there was a point when Motorhead CDs were available everywhere. But the idea that there was a unique version of it, I said, I'm in. I'm buying this one. That was my first order of business when I got back home. After getting back to Jersey, after 2 months in Paris Island, I want to go to Vintage Vinyl. That's what it meant to me. So going to Vintage Vinyl at every possible opportunity to buy CDs became a thing. And anytime I was even within like a half hour of the store, I would want to go there. Like there was for a while, some of my doctors were in Freehold, which is the town Springsteen's from, if you're listening outside of Jersey. And that's about a half hour from Woodbridge. So I was kind of halfway to Vintage Vinyl anyway. So if I had a doctor's appointment, I'd say, well, I'm kind of halfway there. Why don't I just drive the half hour and buy some CDs and browse around? I mean, there was never a time I went to Vintage Vinyl and I didn't buy. I don't think there was ever a time when I didn't buy anything. I would be shocked if I went there, browsed, and left with absolutely nothing. If you told me that, I might believe it, but it would still be a surprise. Pretty sure I bought something on every single trip. I remember there was one time, this was sometime in 2001, because I was 19, and there were three kids who came in. The oldest one must have been 15, 16, and he was dressed like a stereotypical punk rock kid. He had a mohawk or kind of faux hawk going. I don't remember exactly, but he had the leather jacket with the buttons on it and the patches and everything. And he was dressed raggedy. And he had these two younger kids with him that were maybe 12, 13. And this was in the middle of the day because I was in community college at the time and I only had classes on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So I went on, you know, this is one of the days when I didn't have to be at school. And I thought, why the hell aren't these kids in school? It's a weekday. What are they doing here? And it was just funny. I remember this kid walking over to the hardcore punk section and pulling a CD out of the rack and showing it to the two younger kids and saying, never mind the bollocks by the Sex Pistols. This is the only album you'll ever need. It's just one of those moments where I thought, wow. So that made me laugh because it was one of those kind of stereotypical things in the same way. If a stereotypical metalhead came in the store, let's say the same age, say 15, 16 year old with two 12 year olds and went to the metal section and said, Rain and Blood by Slayer, this is the only album you'll ever need. It's just one of those things that made me laugh because it was kind of a stereotypical thing to do if you fit that kind of rock stereotype. If, you know, you can tell what somebody's into a mile off because of their choice in fashion or their look or whatever the hell you want to call it. And if you're wondering if the rest of this show is just going to be stories from Vintage Vinyl, yes, it fucking is. So here are a bunch more. January 17th, 2001, Ozzy Osbourne is doing an in-store Vintage Vinyl. So I had to go. And yes, there's a story there. I think the store had an email list at the time, or maybe it was just posted on the website, which I would check regularly anyway. But it would have been impossible to not hear about this because someone is huge, a legend like Ozzy Osbourne, is coming to, even though it's Vintage Vinyl, a store that at that point had been in business for 20 plus years, the idea that he's coming to a record store in Jersey to promote his new album, which in 2001, his album was Down to Earth. That's crazy. It's a big deal, so it's a wristband event, so you actually had to go in and pre-order the CD, and understandably, they charged list price for the CD, because why wouldn't they make as much money as possible, because you know people will pay whatever the hell it would take. So I figured somebody's going to go with me. Somebody's going to want to go with me. So I pre-ordered two of them, $19 a pop, and got two wristbands. And nobody wanted to go with me. I couldn't believe it. But at that time, I mean, this is before the Osbournes TV show. And so like, people would have been more interested at that point when Ozzy became this kind of sad caricature of himself. This was maybe a year or two away from that. There weren't a lot of people interested. So my friend Dan did want to go. Like, he was up for, yeah, I'll go meet Ozzy and take a picture. Why not? Because I think that's all it was. I think he got the CD. I don't think he was signing anything. I'm pretty sure he was just doing pictures. But I thought, if I could have a Polaroid with Ozzy Osbourne, hell yes. That'll be something I'll have for the rest of my life. This will be awesome. So we get there, the night of January 17th, and there's a crowd. And it's a huge crowd. And it's January, so it's cold. And frankly, I don't even remember how far away we had to park. But, man, an insane crowd just behind a barricade. Huge police presence, obviously. And I don't remember how long we were waiting there for. We probably got there at most like an hour before the scheduled start time. A van pulls up, you know, behind a police escort and everything. And Ozzy comes out. And at the time, you know, they blast the single, which is Gets Me Through, was the first single off that album. As soon as he gets out of the van, and they just kind of waves to the crowd, and then they walk him inside. And then somebody with a megaphone is saying like, OK, start lining up over here, or whatever it was. And there was a huge line, like ridiculous, crazy, huge line, because obviously there were tons of people. I'm sure they capped it at maybe a couple hundred, but it was massive, as you would expect, as it should be, as an Ozzy Osbourne in store should be, even in 2001. But in my mind, I thought, are we going to stand out here in the freezing cold waiting to get a Polaroid, which is going to be a quick, like, 2 second moment? Like, you're probably not going to get to actually have a verbal exchange or any kind of conversation with Ozzy. They're just going to snap a photo with this many people. They're going to snap the photo and just keep it moving. So I said to Dan, why don't we go get something to eat? Woodbridge Mall was right up the street. If you just go slightly up Route 1, you go to Woodbridge Mall. I said, let's go to Applebee's and eat something and then come back and get in line, because we have our wristband, so we're going to get in. So no problem. So we went to Applebee's. We ate for however long. Now, here was the stupid part, and I shouldn't have done this unless I don't recall, but maybe there was a moment of feeling like, oh no, this isn't going to happen. And also, unfortunately, it's that impatience you have when you're 19, when having to wait for something. It's like, oh God, I don't want to stand in line and wait for something. You know, meanwhile, fast forward a couple of years later, and I'm standing outside for like 6-7 hours, however the hell long it was, to meet Springsteen for just a quick photo and a quick exchange with him. But back when I was 19, I mean, and it was cold. Come on, it was January. So standing outside for who knows how many hours it would have taken, I was like, let's kill some time and stay inside where it's warm and we'll eat some chicken tenders or something. But at some point, we slid the wristbands off of our wrists. But I hung on to it. I didn't throw it out. I wanted to keep it because I said, we're going to go back. So we ate and we end up going back. And the line's a lot shorter. And as we're getting through the parking lot to the entrance, because the thing is kind of like blocked off, so you can't just go to the store. Obviously, the store wasn't open just for customers. And there's a cop at the front of the barricade who stops us and says, you guys need a wristband to get in. And I said, I have one. And I pulled the wristband out of my pocket. I should have put it back on my wrist at the time. But he looks at the wristband and says, this has already been used, and then takes it and puts it in his pocket. And at that point, I wasn't assertive enough to have challenged him or said something or whatever. But here's the thing. It couldn't have been used because when you went in the store, they were cutting the wristband off you. So there was nobody walking out, which was the point. They didn't want people walking out and handing off wristbands to people outside. So it couldn't have been used because they were collecting the wristbands once you got physically inside the store. Once you were through the door, they were cutting the wristband off and putting them in the garbage. So it couldn't have been used. So I have a feeling that cop just used the wristband to get in and actually meet Ozzy, because why the hell would he have taken it? Like, you can't get in. And at the same time, is it the guy's like working for the store, like Ozzy's personal security or something like that? Like, you can't get in because your wristband looks like it's used. Like, who the hell was he to make that kind of judgment call? So I ended up leaving pissed off. Dan kind of didn't care. He was just along for the ride. And I don't think he ever paid me the $19 for the CD. And I don't even know what he did. He probably sold the CD or something. He probably never even listened to it. So that was a bummer. I mean, there is a video that was, you can actually find it on the Vintage Vinyl YouTube channel of it. It's kind of a quick collection of clips that they shot on a camcorder, and it's literally just people walking up to Ozzy. They're snapping a photo and then they're moving him out of the way to get to the next person. Like, you don't get to say anything to him. He wasn't signing anything. They had this throne for him, so it looked cool, but you were just literally getting a Polaroid and that's it. So it wasn't some huge loss. It's not like you actually had a moment with the guy. They were just moving people through. And I get it, because it's a big event and it'd be very easy for someone to get into a conversation and take up a lot of time and hold up the line and everything. I understand why it was done that way. it still would have been cool to have it happen, but seeing kind of how it played out years later when the video went out on YouTube, I said, all right, that wasn't a huge loss, but still the way it played out just kind of sucked because I was basically denied entrance by someone who didn't even work for the fucking store. So fast forward now, August 20th, 2002, the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th Ramones albums, studio albums, were getting reissued by Rhino Records with bonus tracks. I'd already gotten the first four, and I could not wait to get my hands on remastered versions of End of the Century and Too Tough to Die because they're two of my favorite Ramones albums. Plus, bonus tracks, stuff that was previously unreleased or stuff that was only available on like vinyl singles and stuff like that. I could finally have it on CD. Bring it on. So that was the day I'm going to Vintage Vinyl because they're most likely to have it. You weren't going to be able to find the Ramones remasters in Target or Walmart or something like that. You wouldn't have found it at some local place. Yet another excuse to go to Vintage Vinyl. Why not? And I also remember the first Black Crowes live album came out that day as well, because I remember buying that and I was underwhelmed by it. That was actually kind of a bummer. I sold that shortly after because I thought this they weren't that great. So I walk in the door. I'm sure I browse around a little bit. I grab the four Ramones releases, the Black Crowes CD, and I head up to the counter. And because it's Tuesday, it's the street date for these albums. So obviously they have boxes of them. And there's a guy and a girl behind the counter. She's putting price stickers on all the CDs. She got stacks of these Ramones CDs and she's putting the price stickers on them. And as I walk up to the counter with my arm full of Ramones CDs, the exact CDs that are in front of her, she turns to the guy. She said, was it really necessary for them to re-release these albums? And sorry to laugh. I'm not laughing at my own story. It's just a funny circumstance. Because it's one of those things you see in like a sitcom or a movie where it's kind of a scrambled version of that moment when somebody's talking bad about their boss. Meanwhile, the boss is walking up behind them. And when, at a point, they notice the expressions on their friends or coworkers' faces change. And then they have the moment of, he's behind me, isn't he? And then they turn around and there's the boss. It's like, of course she had to say something like that at that moment when somebody's walking up with all four of these CDs, just bright-eyed and excited about like, I've been waiting for these CDs to come out. And meanwhile, she's like, was it really necessary to reissue these albums? Fast forward now to October of 2002. Donna's Weekend. The Donna's album Spend the Night had come out and it was a major label album. They were on Atlantic Records now, which was great because we'd gotten into them. My friend who went to the in-store with me and went to their concert the day after their appearance at Vintage Vinyl. We'll get to that in a moment. He liked the Donnas because he was a big fan of the movie Jawbreaker and he had the Jawbreaker soundtrack and Rock and Roll Machine by the Donnas was on the soundtrack. And it was the first time I heard the Donnas. So if I'm being honest, like I would have heard about them, I'm sure at some point, but the reason I heard the Donnas was they had a song on the Jawbreaker soundtrack. And I said, oh, this is awesome. And they were, I think 3 years older than us, something like that. So like they're around our age or an all girl band. This is great. I miss that band so much. If I could snap my fingers and reunite one band with all the surviving members, it would be the Donnas. I still miss the Donnas so much. But they were going to be a Vintage Vinyl, signing the new album. And they were playing at a club called Warsaw in Brooklyn the day after, which I don't know if that place exists anymore. But, and mind you, this is Brooklyn of 2002. I remember telling people I was going to a concert in Brooklyn. They were like, really? You're going to Brooklyn? Be careful. Because Brooklyn was not the hipster haven that it is in 2021, or has been for the last couple of years. No, Brooklyn was Brooklyn back when it was. I really don't know how to describe it other than that. So my friend and I planned Donna's Weekend. We're going to go to the in-store. I was going to get a signed album. He didn't buy one. He just ended up kind of talking to them and shaking their hands and everything. And we got a photo. And this wasn't a wristband event. I guess they weren't expecting to have like a huge turnout. But I actually bought the album on vinyl because I knew that would be a lot cooler to have a signed album cover because it's so much bigger than a CD. I won't necessarily pull the record out and listen to it. So like this, I can preserve and it'll look great. And if you've seen some of the shows on Zoom, that autographed Donna's vinyl has been rotating in one of the frames on the wall in the backdrop. That album was signed at Vintage Vinyl in October 2002. And we got a photo with them. We kind of were able to kneel down on either side of the table. And I brought maybe a disposable camera or something like that. These were in the days of film and having to take your film to get developed. That was a roll of film for Donna's Weekend. We also brought the camera to the show at Warsaw the day after. So that night after the meet and greet, we headed about 10 minutes south to New Brunswick to the movies to see this awful movie you may remember if you're unlucky called Ghost Ship, which I didn't want to go see at all. I'd probably enjoy that movie now because it's not a great horror movie, and it's just kind of cheesy, and I absolutely hated it at the time, but he was super excited about Ghost Ship, and I thought, all right, we'll go see it. We're doing something we did something I wanted to do today, and we're going to this thing tomorrow, but he was excited, but I was like, I'm more excited. Okay, we'll go see this stupid movie. We went and saw Ghost Ship. It's an AMC theater now, but it would have been a Lowe's theater. Lowe's New Brunswick 18, which was a newer theater at the time. It had stadium seating, and everything was brand new and shiny and clean and state of the art. And so that was a theater that we love going to. In fact, for a long time, my perfect day was go to Guitar Center in East Brunswick on Route 18 to play guitars, to buy accessories, strings, picks, whatever. Go to Vintage Vinyl, go to Uno's Chicago Grill across the street and down a little ways from Vintage Vinyl, and then go see a movie at the Lowe's New Brunswick Theater. That was my perfect day out for years. If I could hit those four places in a day, Chris was a happy guy. So skipping ahead a little bit, fall of 2003, I don't know exactly when, but Guitar for the Practicing Musician released a special edition issue, which must have been made with me in mind. It was Guitar Heroes of the 80s. And one of the articles in this special release magazine was the 50 greatest guitar albums of the 80s. Now, I owned a bunch of them already because, of course, there was Iron Maiden, Number of the Beast, and there was Joe Satriani, Surfing with an Alien, and the Whitesnake 1987 album. A lot of albums you would have if you were just a fan of any era of rock and metal. But there were some albums that I was unaware of or hadn't heard of, and they were albums that weren't necessarily readily available because they were from the 80s. I mean, they probably came on CD in like 1990 because originally when they came out, I'm sure they were just on, record and cassette. Again, I knew I was going to find them just anywhere. That required a trip to Vintage Vinyl. And I know I definitely got Yngwie Malmsteen's Marching Out, his second album with Rising Force. Actually, the first album with Rising Force and Marching Out were back to back on the list. They were like number 16, 17, something like that. And the other one, a band I never heard of, was Danger Danger, their self-titled debut album. Definitely got those two CDs on that day in Vintage Vinyl. A couple other ones I couldn't find. And some of them were obviously out of print. And this is still years before digital and streaming, where now you can find all of those albums and just create a little playlist based on, hey, this is what Guitar for the Practicing Musician circa 2003 said were the 50 greatest guitar albums of the 80s. But that was part of my mission, was I got to get these albums and I need to hear them and I need to see what's going on here. So another excuse to go to Vintage Vinyl, I am in. And then one of the most important trips to Vintage Vinyl, August 4th, 2004, once again, about a month before, the store announced Cheap Trick is doing it in-store at Vintage Vinyl. One of my favorite bands is coming to my favorite record store, and I can meet them and get autographs. I was going to be there no matter what. The band was actually promoting a DVD called From Tokyo to You, and not only was it going to be a signing, a meet and greet and signing, but they were going to be doing a performance, an acoustic performance. So even better, I get to see them play in this place, and I get to meet them, and I'm going home with a signed something. Awesome. And I purposely chose my Dream Police album because it's a bright colored album cover. So I thought if all the Sharpies are black, at least the autographs will show up. So even though it's not my favorite Cheap Trick album, I thought this one is going to look great. And that's been a fixture in the home studio since I've been doing the shows on Zoom. That autographed Dream Police vinyl was signed August 4th, 2004 by Cheap Trick in Vintage Vinyl. On top of the fact that I actually got to have a brief exchange with each of the four guys. Bunny Carlos was still in the band at the time. I talked to him, and he was doing this series of Bunny's Basement Bootlegs, is what they were called, which were live show recordings from over the years. There were some from the early 70s that they put out, definitely two, with shows from, I think, before even their debut album came out, or maybe around the time their first album came out in 77. So these were very early shows, a very young band, and some much more raw versions of the songs that later came out on albums. And then there was one called Semi-Acoustical, which was a bunch of acoustic concert appearances. There were some sound checks in there. There was a covers one with just covers they'd done at live concerts throughout the years. And these were a big deal. You could only order them through a certain website, and they were like $29-$30 a pop. Sorry to say, I eventually sold them because they kept kind of going up in value and certain ones were worth even more. But there's a point where it's like, well, they just come in a cardboard sleeve and it has this autograph and it looks like a stamp of Bunny Carlos's face. Well, I've already ripped the audio. I have the MP3s on my computer, so I guess I don't need the physical CD. That having the physical version became less important to me the older I got. I just wanted to have the songs. I wanted to have the music. So I ended up selling all of them on eBay, a few of which I'd bought on eBay in the first place. But there was also a point when they were going for $80 a pop. I don't know if they ever crossed 100, but they were going for a serious amount of money. And I thought, oh, if I'm sitting on $400 or $500 here, I think I should be able to part with these. Cause again, at least I get to keep the music. That was the important part. So when I talked to Bunny, I was able to ask him, like, do you have any more Bunny's Basement bootlegs coming out? And he said, yeah, we got a few things. We got some concerts from the 80s and a couple other things. Unfortunately, they never released anymore. So the stuff he talked to me about never actually came out. Robin Zander was next. And I told him how I never realized someone could sing in so many different voices and have so much range in their voice and everything. And he made a joke about, well, it's meant total detriment to my career, but, you know, I'm glad you enjoyed it, or something like that. I forget how he phrased it, but he did say, like, well, it's meant total detriment to my career, which I thought was kind of funny. Tom Peterson was talking to somebody, so I just kind of got a quick handshake from him and just said thanks for everything, or, you know, thanks for the music or something like that. And he was like, hey, all right, and shook my hand. And then Rick Nielsen was on the end. I don't remember exactly what I said to him, but that wasn't the most important part of this story. So the band's getting up to leave at the end. I'm still near the front where the signing table was, and I had a little disposable camera with me. And I said, I'm going to seize the opportunity and try to get a picture with Rick Nielsen, who's just underappreciated as a guitar player and who wrote a ton of the songs, particularly those early records. And I said, I got to get a picture with Rick Nielsen just to try to get a picture quickly. I turned to the guy who was closest to me, handed him the camera and said, hey, would you mind taking a quick picture of me with Rick Nielsen? And this guy was, he was wearing stack shoes, platform shoes. But he was still about 5'1". So not only is he about a foot shorter than Rick and I, but he just takes the camera, holds it up, click, and before I know it, he's handing it back to me. He literally just snapped a picture, handed it back, and then just kind of wandered off in whatever direction. I just thought, what the hell? So unfortunately, the photo I have with me and Rick Nielsen, my eyes are closed and my chin is doubled, because this idiot just went click and then just handed the camera back to me. So fuck that guy, wherever he is. But I got my autographed Dream Police album, and that's what counts. Got it signed in person at my favorite record store, one of my favorite bands. Huge deal for me. So something that's become a big deal in recent years has been Record Store Day, which traditionally has been every April since the first one, 2008. April 19th, 2008. Yes, I did research for this episode because I didn't remember all the dates offhand. Now, I just graduated from Musicians Institute, and I was visiting Jersey for 2 weeks after graduation. That happened to coincide with Record Store Day, so I thought, well, I got to check this out. Like, whatever it is, nobody really knew at the time, and there were exclusive releases announced. There was that much information out there about it. But I said, let me at least check this thing out. And at the time, Dan, who was with me for the Aussie in-store that did and didn't happen, he was kind of the last of my friends who was into buying CDs and down for trips to vintage vinyl. He eventually defected to Spotify and streaming and everything else. So the last couple of years, I couldn't tell you the last time I went with him to vintage vinyl, sorry to say. But we did go the first Record Store Day together in 2008. And there were a bunch of artists who were playing all day, and I don't honestly remember all of them. The only person I remember who was there was Ben Taylor, who's the son of James Taylor and Carly Simon, who looks so much like James Taylor is crazy. He's bigger. He's definitely taller, and he's not as, I don't call James Taylor scrawny, let's say slender, and still has his hair, or at least did in 2008. And it was just him and an acoustic guitar. And he did do a song about a record store. I don't know what it was. I just remember the lyrics were something about, you know, at my record store, at my local record store, something like that. It was a really cool song. There wasn't a huge crowd. There's a little bit of a line to get in, but it wasn't nearly representative of what Record Store Day became even 3 years later, because I remember going in 2011 and 2012 with Dan, and the line was wrapped all the way around to the back. It was a huge line to get in because these releases, because they were exclusive and limited, and at this point, this is when the vinyl resurgence kind of started to happen in the end of the late aughts and early 2010s. That's when vinyl started coming back. So now people are looking for these exclusive releases, even if they were available in like CD box sets. And eventually, if they were available digitally, people still wanted the records. So now Record Store Day became a really big deal. But that first one was very low key, very quiet. I picked up a couple of things. I got almost an entire bag full of samplers because they were giving away so many things at the time, so many CDs. And I used to get those from vintage vinyl anyway. There's always be promo CDs and promos for concerts and stuff like that. So I have a lot of just, you know, one and two track CDs from bands you maybe never heard of, or, you know, the song from a soundtrack that was coming out or whatever. I have a whole box of these things that I got from vintage vinyl. But anyway, that first Record Store Day, having been there and again at my favorite record store for something that's very much become a thing in the last few years, that was a big deal. And that was a lot of fun to be there for that. And it was just luck because it happened to be the time I was home visiting, you know, and then obviously 6 weeks later, I was back living in Jersey again. But At the time, it was, oh, it's so great to be back here. I'm glad to be home. I'd only been home for visits twice in that 2-year period. This was the third one because I graduated. That was like my parents' graduation gift for me, was that they got me the plane ticket to come home. But yeah, man, that first record store day, that was something. That was really, really cool. So the last vintage vinyl in-store I tried to go to was in 2011. David Coverdale, singer of Whitesnake, was going to be there. Another one of my favorites. They had a new album coming out, Forevermore. You have to pre-order it, get a wristband, that whole thing. I said, great, this is awesome. Put in for the day off work. This is during the brief period of time where I worked for Whole Foods. That was a very short 10 months when I worked for Whole Foods. I put in for the day off. Of course, they said no. I said, well, look, I have something I got to get to that day. Can I get out at like 5? And the in-store was early, too. It was at like 5 o'clock, which is weird because I don't believe Whitesnake had a show that night. Maybe they did have a show in the city. I'm not sure. I don't understand why I wouldn't have gotten tickets to the concert as well. But David Coverdale was signing the album. I was like, we're doing this. We are going. I am going to this thing by myself, and I'm getting myself a David Coverdale autograph and yet another record I can put up on the wall. My boss, who was a dick, let's just be honest, and he fired me like 2 months later anyway, so who cares? He wouldn't let me leave until 5. Like, well, the best I could do is let you out of here at 5 o'clock. I'm like, okay, fine. It's like 45 minutes of vintage vinyl. I'll get there and it should be fine. I'm sure he'll still be there. Long story short, it's actually not that long a story, but by the time I got there, at not even 6 o'clock, David Coverdale was already gone. So I never got an autograph. And I can't believe he wasn't even there for an hour. I don't know what the circumstance was. There was no crowd. I walked in and the place was dead. And I'm just thinking, okay, something's wrong. And I had to bring my receipt so I could get the Forevermore CD that I pre-ordered. And they said, you missed him. He's already gone. I was like, what the fuck? How could he be gone? This thing didn't even start an hour ago. You're telling me whoever showed up, because there must have been a bunch of people showed up. I realize it's not Ozzy or Cheap Trick necessarily, but there must have been a bunch of people from Jersey or New York or whatever who would come to this in-store for a signing. Because vintage vinyl also wasn't uptight. They would let you bring something else to sign. It didn't just have to be like the new album, whatever you pre-ordered. It didn't have to be that. You could bring something in. Like, that's why I was able to get my Dream Police record signed, because they were cool about, yeah, you can bring something and have them sign it. You couldn't bring a stack of stuff that you were clearly just going to sell on eBay, but they were okay. They weren't super like strict about like, no, whatever you're buying, you get that signed and that's it, which was another thing I appreciated about them. So unfortunately that didn't work out, which was a bummer. And now unfortunately Whitesnake is going to be retiring. 2022 is going to be the last ever tour. So that sucks. Don't know if I'll ever get a David Coverdale autograph, but somehow just missed him by I don't know how many minutes, but I'm serious. I got there about 45 minutes after the thing started and he was gone. And that was, I don't know what the circumstances were, or maybe just not enough people showed up, which it's also 5 o'clock on a weekday. So maybe there were less people. I mean, I don't know what day of the week the Cheap Trick thing was. And, you know, Ozzy was at night and it was January, so not a whole lot of competition for stuff to do. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people are still at work. Not everyone was going to try to leave work earlier, get the day off to meet David Coverdale like I was. But I guess maybe there wasn't enough of a crowd or something. I didn't even ask. I was so disappointed, especially because I hustled to get there and like left work and had to make this big stink to even get out of work early just to go to this thing. So I was just so disappointed. I didn't even ask like what happened. I just remember being like, oh, fuck. Can't believe it. Can't believe I missed it. And even during the 6 years when I was living in L.A., vintage vinyl was still important to me. They were still number one in my book because I would come home usually twice a year, you know, during the LA years from 2012 to 2018. I would usually make 2 trips home a year. And every single time I would go to vintage vinyl. And when I was home for 7 weeks at the beginning of 2016, because my father's bypass surgery, I went multiple times. I mean, as long as I could get away, I was here to help my parents out. I wasn't here just so I could go CD shopping every week or every other week. But it was always, I always made a point to go to vintage vinyl, particularly every Christmas. And the last couple of Christmases when I was living in LA, I would always buy a Christmas CD, a holiday music CD, because I am a sucker for Christmas music. I will say if there's a holiday CD by an artist I just like, I will pick up their Christmas CD just because I'm that way. I guess I'm a softie when it comes to Christmas music. But every Christmas, I would buy something at vintage vinyl. Every trip home, I'd always make the time to go there because it was important to me. And even with the pandemic, in the early part of the pandemic, before things got really out of control, the point of that first stimulus in April of 2020 was so people could pay their bills, but also we had to feed the economy. Spend your money on goods and services. What did I do when I got my $1,400 deposit? Placed an order with vintage vinyl. Got to support a local business. And I got that sweet Prince 1999 box set that came out, which was out of print at the time. I didn't know it, but I just wanted it. So I spent my stimulus supporting vintage vinyl because that's the kind of lunatic I am. Well, honestly, I wish there were some of my friends who had stories to tell about vintage vinyl. I mean, all of my friends, all the people who've been on the podcast, you know, Jack, Ryan, and Andrew, everybody's been dragged to that store with me. Everybody's had to wait on me while I'm going aisle by aisle through that store for 2 hours deciding what it is I'm going to get. And man, it's a drag that it's gone. Like I said, it still doesn't feel real yet. And, you know, a couple people asking in light of, you know, if there was a definite date as July 31st was approaching, because the original statement was by July 31st, the store will be closing. I guess the lease was up at the end of July. A bunch of people said, how do you feel? And I said, I don't really know, but I'm going to miss this place like a dead friend. And I realize that sounds like hyperbole, but I mean it. Vintage vinyl was a huge part of my life this last 21 years. And unfortunately, not a whole lot of record stores in Jersey anymore. There have been a bunch that have closed recently. In the last year, because of the pandemic, a lot of record stores had to close up. A lot of smaller ones that I hadn't even heard of and didn't hear of until it was announced that they were going out of business. There's a place in Jersey City and there was a place in Hackensack. And I thought, how did I miss these places? So I'm going to start making more trips into New York and find some hole-in-the-wall record stores, because I know there's definitely some there. I mean, there's Jack's Music in Red Bank. That place still exists. Unfortunately, they have like banker's hours, so they close by 5 or 6 o'clock at night on weekdays. And that was another thing. At least Vintage Vinyl was open from 10 to 10 basically every day. I think Sundays they were open 11 to 8. But that was still a good enough amount of time where you can make it there. I'm sure that only helped them stay afloat, too, the idea that you can go and, you know, they're open a good amount of time. As late as, you know, like a Target or some grocery stores were open, you could still swing by Vintage Vinyl. And I did. There are many times I rolled in at 9:30. I was like, okay, I got 30 minutes. What can I get? Let's figure it out. I got this and this and this. And eventually with like notepads in your smartphone, I would just make a list and I would add to it and I would remove stuff if I was able to pick it up. But I would go in there with a list and say, if they have this, I'm going to get this. Okay, if they have that, I'm at least going to look for that. And if I had a cool find, I would usually send a photo to somebody. Do you want me to pick this up for you? There was a whole lot of that. And damn, I'm going to miss that. I really am. I really can't put into words how much I'm going to miss this place. Saying I don't have words to describe it probably sounds a little stupid, considering I've been telling stories from the past about me and going to the store and everything for about an hour. But there's still so much below the surface. And at the same time, I realize record stores and physical media, I realize that stuff doesn't mean a lot to people anymore. But to me, it does. I mean, there's a long time, even with things like eBay, and you know, now there's so many different online forums where you can find music and, you know, original pressings of records and out of print CDs and all sorts of stuff. But there was the part of me that for a long time really enjoyed the hunt, going to a store and seeing what I could find, or taking the drive to see if it was there. I mean, even long before, like, you could pre-order everything on Amazon. You know, Amazon was just books for a long time, so they weren't really even a CD resource until, you know, the later 2000s. I mean, I didn't start shopping heavily on Amazon till like 2009. But they weren't a website where you just buy everything. And now, if there are CDs I want, I mean, I do live kind of near a Barnes & Noble, but they don't even get every release I'm looking for. I have to pre-order some stuff on Amazon. And it just kind of sucks that, you know, it may show up in the mail on the day of release, but it's not the same as going to the record store and picking it up and unwrapping the CD in your car and putting it in the CD player. Yes, I still have a CD player in my car. And just flipping through the booklet. And it's the same relationship people have, you know, particularly older generations have, with records. There was something about that tactile, that tangible object, and going to the store and getting the record and bringing it home and unwrapping it and putting it on and going through everything, you know, reading every line of the liner notes and all that stuff. There really is something about that experience that I still love. It sucks that there are less places I could get that experience. And it's a shame to see the dwindling of record store culture. Thankfully, there's still 3 Amoeba Records locations in California. Unfortunately, the Hollywood one closed, the one on Sunset, to make way for, of course, more overpriced high-end apartments, because that's all LA is becoming. But don't get me started on that. I don't want to get another anti-LA rant. When I heard Amoeba was closing the Sunset location and moving to a smaller location in Hollywood, I was going to fly out there to shop there once again. In fact, February of 2020, I was going to go just for a long weekend. And of all people, Andrew was going to go with me, because he did say, I would like to go to California at some point and see it. And I said, look, I want to go out because I want to shop at Amoeba. And he knew enough of Amoeba from me and from trips that Jack and Ryan had taken out there. The first one with me 10 years ago. And then the trips they'd taken out, they always wanted to go to Amoeba, and they would buy a lot of stuff on CD. And actually, that was one of the things about Jack with Vintage Vinyl, because Jack's a big Rush fan. So every time we went to Vintage Vinyl, he would always buy one Rush CD. That became kind of his tradition. I couldn't tell you the last time we went and the last Rush CD he bought there, but that was his thing. Every time he'd go and get it, usually it was a catalog title. It wasn't always the new album because Rush put out albums very infrequently in the last few years, but he'd always pick up one. That was like his thing with vintage vinyl. And that's unfortunately wasn't worth having him on the show to talk about because what's he going to say other than it's a shame? You know, Jack's going to be Jack. But I want to shop at Amoeba again because I said I need that experience. I need that last time to shop at Amoeba. I love that store. It's still second best to me, even though it was a bigger store and they had a whole floor of movies and stuff like that and DVDs. I still regarded vintage vinyl as my favorite record store. And unfortunately, there was a looming pandemic, even though we didn't know it. But with me having this cough that just wouldn't quit for the first 2 months of 2020, that trip to Amoeba didn't come together. So I never got that experience. And with the pandemic, obviously Amoeba closed in March and then never reopened again. So a lot of people didn't get that last experience of shopping there. And the new one's open in Hollywood, and I'm sure it's fine. It's just not going to be the same thing. I'm glad it exists in some form, but I mean, Amoeba Records in Hollywood was always busy. And, you know, with rents and everything else, I understand that there may have been a point where it might not have been sustainable because just the cost of having any kind of real estate in Los Angeles. I mean, now this new one is the ground floor of an apartment building. You know, it's like retail stores on the ground floor of a lot of apartments. So one of these newer buildings in the east part of Hollywood, that's where Amoeba is now. It's not a standalone place, which kind of sucks. But anyway, yeah, vintage vinyl. So anyway, to bring us up to date on all of this, Monday, June 21st, that email shows up. I wake up to it. I'm crushed. My sister, big Rolling Stones fan, she's gotten more into record shopping and would make a lot of trips. You know, when I was still living in California, go to Amoeba together a lot and spend hours. She used to wait on me and would just be bored while I'm looking for stuff. But eventually, with her getting into buying, you know, Rolling Stone stuff and just getting more albums anyway, she got more into it. So we enjoyed taking those trips together. And it was one of the things I missed or was going to miss with moving back to Jersey from California. But our last trip to Jersey pre-pandemic, we went to Vintage Vinyl together and we had a lot of fun. And the plan as of now is for her to come home this Christmas. And one of the things she was looking forward to doing was going to Vintage Vinyl again. And she's not going to get that chance. And that's a bummer. And in fact, when I read the email, the first person I reached out to was my sister. I just took a screenshot of the top part of the email, closing by July 31st, Robin Donner retiring. And I sent her the screenshot with just the text underneath that said, fuck today. I was so upset. And then I took that screenshot and just put it on my Instagram story with Goodbye Blue Sky by Pink Floyd playing during that panel. Man, it was a tough pill to swallow. I went there on Thursday, 3 days later, knowing that there was going to be like a month. I said, all right, well, let me try to make a couple of trips there anyway. And they announced in that email that everything was 30% off. So I said, okay, well, I'll go there looking for a couple of things, but I just kind of want to shop at Vintage Vinyl while I can. And I went there and I was furious. Not only was traffic horrendous getting there, but the place was loaded with the stuff people were grabbing and the stuff that was sold out. Like no Iron Maiden CDs, no Judas Priest CDs, no AC/DC CDs. Like people were going there just buying clearly the most popular artists. So it wasn't people who would be shopping at Vintage Vinyl anyway. And I went there and I'm looking at all these people just peeling through all the CDs and flipping through the records and, you know, grabbing all sorts of stuff. And the records, the collectible stuff that was on the walls, you know, that cost, you know, hundreds of dollars. Well, maybe not hundreds, but, you know, it's 7-inch singles, 12-inch singles, literal vintage vinyl. A lot of those were gone already just in those couple of days. It was like watching vultures picking at the bones of a dead body. I was furious. And I left there in a really, really bad mood to where I was like, I don't know if I'm going to go again. Because not only does it not look the same, but I hate these people. Look at them. They're buying all this stuff from my favorite record store. I can't believe it. The audacity. They're coming in and they're not even music fans. You know, I got very up my own ass about the whole experience. And I'm not going to say I'm proud of it, but it ultimately made me sad. It really did. And I thought, fuck, this place is never going to be the same again. I'd just been there the week before they announced it too, before they announced the closure. I'd actually traded in a bunch of stuff. I had some CDs. I had a couple of DVDs for movies I'd upgraded to Blu-ray. I had a couple of Blu-rays that I either got better versions of or upgraded to 4K because I'm starting to get some 4K discs now. But that's a topic for a different episode. And I made a note of the things I was going to get the next time I came back. I didn't expect it was going to be the following week. But that stuff was gone already. And I left there just really disheartened. And I said, I don't know if I'm going to go again because that last time I went, it still looked like vintage vinyl. And now it doesn't look like vintage vinyl. And ultimately, I made two more trips there. My last one was actually Monday, July 26th. So the last Monday they were ever open. Picked up a couple of things. Again, I did make a post on Instagram and left it as my profile picture. Just took a selfie in front of it. And I'm not a big selfie person, of course, but I just said, I need a picture of me in front of the store. I have a bunch from throughout the years, but I said, one last time, let's get one last picture. I still picked up a few things. I mean, at that point, what was left was 70% off, and there wasn't a whole lot left. I still peeled through as much as I could. I was there for about an hour because I got there at 9 p.m., so I did get there late at night. So I didn't have as much time. But again, the place was a shadow of itself, I'm sorry to say, which was just a drag. And just the idea that, again, it didn't really kick in. I realize there's a lot of stock that's gone. The walls are practically bare. The CDs are consolidated. You know, very few artist cards left. Just kind of everything's alphabetical. Just lumped together by classic rock or heavy metal or jazz and blues or whatever. Just by the letter of the alphabet. It's hard to think about that as being my last experience because it just doesn't, you know, it doesn't feel real. It's a shame. It really is. I'm sorry to see the place go. But again, to go back to the point I started this on, it's the best circumstance you could hope for. If it was because they could no longer pay because of, you know, the pandemic and, you know, we can't afford the lease anymore, or people aren't buying records anymore or whatever, that would have been a terrible way for the store to close. The idea that Rob and Donna made the choice to retire is perfect. That's the best anybody can hope for in this circumstance, that they said, we're going out on our terms. We are closing our store on our terms. So honestly, none of us can hope for better than that. And if there is a happy ending to this, at least it's that. But just the same, a lot of memories in that place, a lot of good memories, a lot of good times, a lot of good days and hours and thousands of dollars spent. God, so many memories. I'm sure I've forgotten even more things that happened there, more so than what I've told you in this episode. I'm going to miss it. I'm going to miss Vintage Vinyl so much. I'm so grateful for that store being around for that part of my life when I was spending all my money on CDs and when I could just go there and just get lost in everything and just shop and just browse and just, you know, on occasion, take a chance on something just because of the cover. And I get the feeling I'm going to get to do that less and less just with less record stores around. It's something that it's one of those things that honestly I'm having trouble letting go of as time moves on. Because I love my CDs. What can I say? Anyway, bless you, Vintage Vinyl. Congratulations and all the best to Rob and Donna. Sincerely, we're eternally grateful. And listen, that store is just going to be missed forever. It really, really is. And that does it. There's your sap fest for this week. There's Chris's sad bastard story because he can't buy CDs anymore. He can't spend hundreds of dollars on CDs at Vintage Vinyl. But thank you for listening. I had a lot of these stories to share, and I just wanted to share them all in one go because kind of sitting back and reflecting on it, I thought, wow, there really was a lot. There was a lot of stuff I've done over the years here and a lot of cool moments I had, and I'm grateful to have had them. And I'm grateful to have been back in Jersey for the closing of Vintage Vinyl, because if I still lived in California, I would have had to make a trip, especially with missing out on Amoeba. I would have been like, I'm going to risk this Delta variant because I need to go to Vintage Vinyl again. And then I would have been crushed walking in and seeing it, you know, in the state it was for that last month. So I'm grateful to be back in Jersey for a bunch of reasons. But during this time, this is a big one. Make no mistake, this is a big one. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this. And if you enjoyed my nonsense, you can follow me on Twitter at Chris Abalo, on Instagram at Chris Sells Out, and please follow the show at Cape Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Subscribe, share, give the show 5 stars, write a review. It all helps. It's all very much appreciated. And you can support the show on Patreon, patreon.com/CapePod. That's very much appreciated as well. A lot of ideas in the hopper for exclusives. So if you want bonuses, starts at $5 a month. We'd really appreciate it. That money goes back into the show. I'm not buying CDs with that money. I'm not flying to other parts of the country to go to other record stores. No, no. That money goes right back into the show because you want to support the show. We will be here for you and we will give you more stuff because we appreciate you, the listener. I do. I appreciate you guys listening and coming back every week. And if you're new, happy to have you here. Everybody's invited to the party. Come on in and stay a while. And the show will be back next Monday with a new episode, of course. So until then, this is Chris Abalo, and this was yet another experiment.